Hi, everyone. These days, everyone and their mother has a podcast, and we are proof of that. Welcome to our sixth episode of Mom and...
Me.
Which we are calling Playboy and Sweethearts, or The Lessons I've Learned. Air, take it away, honey.
Hi, I'm Aaron. I'm going to take it away. What are we doing?
No, oh, yeah, we know.
Yes, Playboy and Sweethearts. What does that even mean? Was there a lesson I learned from this? No, actually, there's really no lesson from the title of it. However, it certainly sounds phonetically like it just fits into this whole story that we're about to maybe create out of thin air. So, or narrative, if you will. My best friend, just probably around 5, 6, maybe 7, that lived right next door to me, he and I met when we were like 3, 4 years old,
yep.
Hung out all the time. Their family moved into the new neighborhood with us. And you know, eventually we found ourselves just like playing together all the time at each other's houses. You know, we grew up together every step of the way, including elementary school, kindergarten, all that good stuff. So then sometimes, you know, you start to, you know, you get creative. Like you build forts. You like to crawl into things. You like closets. You like to close your friend into the couch and shove them down your hill. little things we did, you know, go into the sleeping bag and slide down the carpeted stairs. Nobody ever got hurt somehow. And then, you know, exploring closets and just like sifting through things because you become like a treasure hunter at that age because there's no crevice of your house that needs to be left unexplored. Every crevice, including underneath your parents' bed, because what a really tiny space that your parents can't fit into anymore and where you kind of feel safe and sort of a closed in from the world. And we, lo and behold, found this lovely stack of Playboys underneath the bed. Playboys, this ancient magazine that featured nude women, usually in their ripe years of just presenting themselves. It was supposed to be maybe a symbol of power, but also, you know, Hugh Hefner and that whole empire he created, of course. But as a kid, I don't care about any of that. I'm just looking at this thing that has this really pretty creature on the front. Do I even like have a thought of liking women at this point? Probably not. Or liking, you know, some having any sexual feelings toward
you were young.
Humans. I was too young to have those thoughts. However, you know,
I recognized
that this was something that was aesthetically pleasing. So, like, I kind of had to like, you know, nurture that. And me and Ben are underneath the bed, and it's after school. And I don't know who's at the house at this point. I guess you're there, but you're
I'm there.
I'm just a kid, and I'm just wanting. You're like, Aaron's fine. He doesn't cause too much trouble. So we get our little snacks. We've got sweet tarts, and for some reason, this is a vivid memory that I happen to be eating sweet tarts out of a little thin paper wrap that you would open up, and we're just like looking at this magazine, and we're looking at boobs. You know, like we're looking at like, you know, like a. A landing strip or whatever, like, was happening in the early 90s down there. And, like, these were naked women, and they're all smiling at us, basically. Why are they all smiling at us? I don't know, but this is, like...
I was unaware, by the way, at this point, I was unaware that...
My mom would leave them in my room with cigars when I was 7 years old, and she said, hey, it's never too early to start thinking that you're an adult. This is going to be fine. He's going to turn out just fine.
Not true.
This is not what happened.
He's making up shit now.
Yeah, so, you know, Playboys, they were there. I didn't care whose it was. It wasn't a thought of mine. I was just eating sweet tarts and opening up this magazine. And I was like, wow, this is interesting. Like, what, you know, what is my history of understanding even what I'm looking at here? I don't know, but we did it often. And I don't remember how often. Maybe it was just a few times. Maybe it was just that one time. But it felt like it was like enough where it was like a thing we did. We would eat the sweet tarts and open up the magazines.
When did you remember when I found out that you were looking at them?
I don't, because I think you're just such a free spirit that you're kind of just like, you know, it wasn't something you were worried about because I wasn't behaving in a way that probably made you concerned. I wasn't going around like pushing my like chest together and being like, look at me, like, doing some strut around the room, like, I'm some hot babe.
Well, I think we weren't a European family by any means, but I think we, you know, kind of didn't really shy away from the naked body. And so it wasn't, I don't think it was such a big
deal.
There
was a level of comfort. Like, my dad would be in his, like, underwear just in the house. I mean, he would be walking on his hands up the stairs and down the stairs.
My mom was on his hands. That's a true story.
I mean, we did live in a circus, but for a number of years. It's not true at all.
He just did a lot of walking on his hands. That's
the
truth.
He did do that, but that's true. Yeah, it was just a very, like, open
handstands.
House. Handstands. For days. It's impressive.
But so what did you learn from that?
I learned that my friend, you know, came out when he was 31 and he's actually gay. So he's, you know, the Playboy magazines, even then, we were too young to even understand what that was. So to me, it was like we were both on the same page. And it was in the middle section of Pamela Anderson's first debut, probably, in Playboy.
Wasn't there something else, other things under the bed? Like, weren't there exercise equipment? Wasn't there some kind of, like, not a stair stepper, but a thing that you would step up on, and I threw that under the bed along
with
it?
Yeah, very likely, but I have no recollection in the sense of, like, the magazines and the Sweet Tarts, me being like, right behind the stepping thing is where we would open the magazines. Just to paint a visual
thing
for everyone to listen, you know, just so in case you couldn't quite visualize the under the bed, you know, how much space do you have, a foot to go with? But I mean, what is the lesson? I think being exposed to things young and then just being like not explained and not don't assume that kids shouldn't try to understand something. And you can at least expose them to it in early age, because while it wasn't intentional, it also made me very mature about nudity. When I would see it, I wouldn't be like giggling. I wouldn't think it was like some, what do you want to call it? Not cliche. But yeah, it didn't seem like it was something I needed to react to, because that was something I was comfortable with.
Or something that was taboo.
I was used to. Taboo, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think taboo is very common when kids are like exposed to things for the first time. Like, every time I end up in a room and somebody offers me cocaine, I'm just like, no thanks, I'm good. And I'm like, why did I just nervously laugh like a six-year-old who just got offered, like, you know, to smoke a cigarette for the first time? Every time I'm in a room and I see cocaine, I'm just like, I turn into like this innocent little, like, I don't know how to react here. It's like, this is new.
It happens often, this whole cocaine thing.
Oh no, not that often. You know, you play music.
I knew better. But okay, so speaking of of those periods of time in your life when you're that young, but what other influences were there? Like, you guys used to watch Rugrats and Mr. Rogers and all kinds of kids' shows. Were there things that you picked up from these kids' shows that I don't know, that helped you move along through life?
I think Hey Arnold really was like the man, because he was like swagger, kind, cool, adaptable, and he was friends with everyone. And I think in a way I felt like I was him. Like, I wanted to be him, because like, he had jazz following him everywhere, and if I had like theme music with me all the time, it's just like,
you think you'd be in a better place if you had jazz music following
you? I mean, better place, or would I just feel like, you know, I was in my own little show and it was like, but I was like helping the world.
I think you're in your own little show anyway, though.
Wait, don't we all? I mean, it's all our
yes,
own show.
I think so.
I mean, we're, you know, what can we do? Malkovich.
How about Mr. Rogers? I know you're a fan of Mr. Rogers.
Oh, I love him. As a kid, I don't really remember him much. It's just more like in my later years, I was just like, wow. Just wow. I don't really have much more to say.
Pretty cool.
But yeah, growing up, I wouldn't say I really like thought about Mr. Rogers. I like playing his theme song on the piano. That's a lot of fun. It makes me feel like I'm floating in a magical land of Happy and cardigans made by his mother.
How about people like Shel Silverstein? I mean, I used to read you some of Shel Silverstein as you were growing up.
It's funny that I remember like the poems with the weird drawings as much as like the words themselves, because there was great illustration with the drawings that was kind of like fantastical meets like creature-esque, and things that didn't even like have to make sense, but they were. So it kind of like opens up your creative mind to be like, oh, nothing has to look like it fits in reality.
I loved him. One of my favorites you actually have on your wall, Come In If You Are a Dreamer. That's a great...
Come in, whether you're a beggar, a liar, a stealer, like, we've got some flax golden tails to spin. You know? Come sit by my fire. Come in. Yes.
I love it. I do.
That's kind of embodies... I love that my brother got me that quote, because I think there's very few quotes that embody me as a human more than that. To me, I'm just like, I don't care where you come from or who you are. Like, I bet you we can find common ground here, or we can at least, like... share some interesting tales.
Yeah.
Whether they're made up or not. Camaraderie. Camaraderie, I think, is it. And that makes me think about just, you know, what do we all need more than anything else is camaraderie. What do we need to get things done to even, like, feel like we're motivated to accomplish anything? I feel like you need camaraderie.
Right.
To and motivate.
And then I love the beauty of that, the simplicity and the beauty of that poem, because it's short, but it's also, come in, you're welcome. Yeah. I'm inviting you into my world. Maybe we have something in common with each other. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that. And I also, one of my favorites of his is the what ifs, because that to me.
What if?
You know, like we do that all the time. What if? Yeah, good stuff. And as of late, I am finding that some of the things that I read when I was younger are the things that have influenced me the most. And I guess because, too, you know, I taught a lot of these poems and literature and everything. So it's more ingrained in me. So one of my very favorites was E.E. Cummings. And I think the thing I love so much about him was just how much he loved nature. And that no matter what, nature seems like to appear out of nowhere. And that's what he was, the message that it was. And yet it changes everything.
All of a sudden,
it's autumn, you know? And then if you're in Baltimore, then it's winter, then it's spring, then it's... But these are the things that have kind of gotten me through some rough times, or just kind of guided me in some way through my life. So, for example, one of my favorite poems that he wrote, E.E. Cummings, was Little Man in a Hurry. Full of an important worry, stop, halt. You know, like, to me, that's breathe. Just take a deep breath. Don't be in such a hurry. And you hear so often, you hear, oh, be in the moment. I try to be in the moment.
You know what's funny? Platitudes is actually one of the words I was going to bring up.
Go ahead.
That's a platitude.
Yeah.
It's basically anything that somebody says that gets said too often to a point where it's lost all meaning and just like substance. So I can say something like, you know, there's always tomorrow, or at least blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Or
It could be worse.
It could be worse.
Yep.
My God, there's so many
of those. It's funny, your sister the other day said to me, Mom, and she just shared something with me, and she said, and please do me a favor, no platitudes. I just need to vent.
Emily said the word platitude.
Yep. Just
that,
like,
is
that funny?
Funny.
Yep.
My little sister.
Your little sister who's 33.
I've heard the word before, but she, you know, she's a therapist, so I think the word platitude has a lot more meaning there, because the last thing you want somebody to respond with is a platitude.
Yep.
When you want them to listen and to really offer like some substance to their advice.
Right.
And a platitude, just for definition's sake, is a remark or statement, especially one with a moral content that has been used too often to be interesting or thoughtful. So it's kind of, you know.
And it's sad that that happens, because
platitudes are, yeah, they're vague. They're cutesy.
Yep.
They look like they're in a Hallmark card.
Yep.
They're totally cliche.
They are.
And it's basically just like, you might as well have just not said nothing, or just said, it's all right, go fuck yourself.
Well, yeah, just like what
Thank you very much, and I will.
It's like, let me see, what maxim do you live by? Well, I like to live in the moment. And then you think, oh, you know, like I've heard that before.
Or we should hang out sometime, which I said yesterday to somebody who I hadn't seen in a while, and that's so vague. Cool, so do you really want to actually see me, or are you just saying that because it was nice to see me, but, you know, you'd like to see me sometime in the near future, not 10 years down the road.
Yeah, and you know, maybe. I think it's said with some sincerity, right? Don't you think it's said with some sincerity?
Thoughts and prayers.
Oh, no, that's another one. Man, that's another one. Thoughts and prayers, yeah, forget
that. How many
that.
Politicians are sending that out right now? We're not going to get into that, but thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
Great.
Doesn't work. Doesn't help necessarily.
Better late than never.
Yeah.
It's not the heat, it's the humidity. That's not a platitude.
Well, I think a platitude, you know, the one I hate, it is what it is.
There's more fish in the sea, which my square boring friend said the other day.
Oh.
Look, we all can get to a point where suddenly we look up and we're like, am I a boring person? Am I actually, like, did I become a really uninteresting, grayish, flat human being that just walks around point A to point B to point C, you rinse and repeat? You know, are you passionate about anything? Do you go to museums ever? Do you read lots of books?
I went to a museum recently.
Oh, nice. There you go.
The American Visionary Art Museum, downtown Baltimore. I took two of my granddaughters. It was fabulous. There was a huge, huge, I don't even know what it was made of, but it was divine. You know, John Waters' Divine.
Oh, yeah.
And it was so big. And then there was this really, really big ball, and it had bras all glued to the entire huge ball. And I've never seen anything like it before, and it made me wonder, is this art? But then who am I?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know. I mean, everybody says, yeah, it's in the eye of the beholder or whatever, but I don't necessarily know if something's art or not. I know what I like, and I think that's a platitude. Maybe not.
No, that's not one. I know what I like. That was like Valley Girlish.
But, you know, there are people in our lives who have influenced us and the people closest to us in our lives. Like, you know, I know that one thing I learned from my dad is just to be kind to other people, no matter what. No matter who they are, no matter where they're
very
from.
Respectful.
I mean, just a respectful gentleman. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. You know, just would defer to other people and just kind. And I learned that from him. And that has gotten me through my life. But there are things that I wish I knew then and I know it now. Like,
that's a platitude.
That is a platitude. All right, okay.
If only I knew then.
That's a great. You were right about that. But like, I wish I thought that I was pretty because I was.
Because you could have gotten so much more ass back
but,
then.
Yeah,
you knew.
I mean,
just
I didn't
imagine
know it.
How many?
What are you saying to your mother? But I had no idea. And I kind of wish I knew, but in a way.
And if you did, what would have changed?
Nothing.
You would have tried acting and then ended up in the horrible industry of film that abuses women constantly?
I don't know. Maybe more confidence in myself. Maybe just a little more confidence.
You wouldn't have been duped by as many salespeople in your life.
Perhaps.
But, you know, not in a terrible way.
Well, here's something that I read recently, and it resonated with me. Shame will tell you that you aren't worth loving. And in my life, I've learned that that's not true. That I am worth loving. You know, and you know, having gone through many things in my lifetime, the way everybody does, there were and are periods of time where I felt shame and I didn't feel loved because of that. But that's something to get past. There's a lot of stuff that we have in our lives to get past. And sometimes just hearing a platitude or hearing a maxim or hearing, you know, whatever you want to call it, you know, quote or whatever, sometimes it helps.
Hey, teamwork makes the dream work. But it kind of does. And, you know, I'll drink from that spoon.
You'll drink from that spoon?
Yeah.
I like that.
I drink from spoons, by the way. I'm different. I try to be.
I like the Dr. Seuss quote, how did it get so late so soon? Because that's how I feel at this point in my life. How did it get so late so soon?
Oh, I'll do that starting next week. I'll do that next month. I'll do that next year. I'll do that. Holy crap, I'm 74. That's not your age, by the way. I'm just saying a number.
Thank you. I appreciate your clarifying that for everybody out there.
Because she at least sounds like she's like in her 50s, right? So let's go
59.
With that. Yeah. So I like to also bring up a word called gobbledygook. Because, you know, Dr. Seuss was a master of mom.
Neologisms.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yes, because I could not have possibly remembered that word. Gobbledygook definitely sounds like one of those, but it also could just be German or Yiddish or something like that, because it certainly sounds like
Yiddish. Yeah, and Dr. Seuss, let me see, Theodor Lessig, I don't know what he was.
Yeah, like gobbledygook. gook is basically what you hear coming out of the mouths of most politicians. So that's kind of, for those who didn't know that the word sounds exactly like what it means, it's like word vomit. That usually has just no meaning behind it. So it's like the next level of platitude. Platitude isn't like in itself bad. It's just overdone. It's overused. It's like hearing that same song that is good in theory, but you've heard it too many times. And because everyone thinks it's good and it needs to be heard all the time, you no longer want to hear it. And when you hear it, you just turn it off.
Yeah. But I mean, doesn't that go along with something that, let's say, an actor on the stage or a singer in a concert, they sing the same songs over and over again. Don't they just have to bring something new to it each time to make it special for them?
Maybe not each time, but like maybe each tour they go around. If people are following them, which they do, I'm sure they vary the tours a little bit depending on, you know, timing, the stage. Great question. I'm just not important enough to know the answers to that.
Well, I often think about that because when I was a teacher, I had to, you know, I taught the same lessons over and over and over and over again. It could have gotten boring, but
I think you found ways to tweak things to make it more interesting for you and to, like, as you read the classroom and adapt to what the kids pay attention to, you change things up too.
Yeah.
That's what makes teachers great. They have to adapt all the time to figure out how they're going to get these ADHD generation kids to pay attention for 5 seconds.
Oh, that's so true.
It's the socials. It's the medias. It's the interwebs. They're just going to change our youth into a bunch of ADHD hooligans. I don't know what accent that is, by the way. I have no idea where I'm from. Doesn't matter. But where I'm from now is talking about a story that I like to talk about, just things that, you know, maybe not near-death experiences, but those moments where something happened, but you still ended up laughing for some reason because you made it and you were fine afterward. So for me, I'll just share a brief one. I was mountain biking with my friend, and he was taking me and a buddy down a trail, and we were having fun. I was getting back in the swing of things, and we were hopping over some logs and things like that. And then we end up just leaping over this ravine that's like 4 feet high, and I'm just following him with no thought to, like, you know, how dangerous this might be. So I completely flip over on my bike, and the bike's upside down. And I'm, like, unscathed, completely fine. So I get up and I just start laughing because every time I've ever come close to really hurting myself, I just start laughing because it just feels like it's, why not? I'm laughing because, like, whoa, that could have been really bad, but I'm okay. So you start laughing a lot. My friend, on the other hand, years later, basically broke his neck doing something similar, but he was riding his bike at 2 a.m. in the morning because apparently that's a thing. For anybody listening, you should definitely let us know if you're one of those, like, nighttime bikers where you have a headlight and it's just, like, a really unique time to be out. I could kind of get it, I guess, if you're into, like, seeing owls, but also, like, why? The same if you're into owls.
You could look at a nightlife picture.
So anyway, near-death experience, I wouldn't say that was necessarily mine, but it made me think about yours mostly because I had to share mine first. My mom sometimes likes to go out by herself. She decided, you know, I'm going to go downtown, like past downtown, at least to Canton, and I'm going to go get some oysters. Because my mom loves her oysters, and we've got great oysters in Maryland and in Virginia and close by. So you ended up going there by yourself. And I'll just fast forward to the part where you are basically knocking in our apartment door outside, letting you in, and you coming in frantically out of breath as if you just, like, got chased by some bear or, like, something bad happened to you, but you were flustered, you're breathing heavy, and, like, Mom, what the heck just happened? So she goes ahead and tells me the lovely story of her eating by herself in the restaurant, which I always would implore anybody to do, because why wouldn't you want to dine by yourself? It's a really nice experience, actually.
It is.
So don't fault you for that. I guess there's no fault here. It's just the fact that my mom could have gone out by an oyster cracker.
Yeah, the
in
cracker.
A restaurant eating by herself in a place where nobody's there. She knows. And it was like 5 p.m. And luckily, somebody gave her the Heimlich. And then it'll tell you that typically after you get the Heimlich maneuver, that you end up basically having a cracked rib cage. So my mom comes over saying, I can't really breathe in that great, but I almost just died swallowing an oyster cracker. And Kelly and I are just like, sit down, here's weed, smoke this, relax for a second. And then it turns out you cracked your rib cage. And it took you like a month or a couple months to heal where you could actually breathe in normally again.
Yeah.
All because you choked on an oyster cracker.
I know. I know. Those oyster crackers, like, they can lodge right in there.
Lodge. Perfect lodge. And they're absorbent.
Yeah. And by the way, there is such a thing. Like, it does pop out. the way you see it pops out, it does pop out. Oh, my God.
So I have this visual of my mom. And it's like that scene in, like, Mrs. Doubtfire where she comes out of the bathroom and she's, like, helping the guy. And then her whole, like, wig flops off and, like, he reveals himself as a man. And everyone's just like, I think that's when it happened, right?
So was there a reason why – I'm trying to think. Why did you bring that? You mentioned something about learning something from something that happens.
Near-death experiences can sometimes make you reflect on, like, silly moments. Where like, kind of you come out of it and you're like, now that I've recovered from this stupid injury, how can I become better? And my stupid injury this year, as we've talked about, was my torn calf.
Oh, yeah.
That happened when I basically was a month and a half in or 2 months after not having a job. My car is gone and – I can't exercise when the weather starts to get nice out for the entirety of the summer and basically up until fall. It's just when shit storms happen and then you suddenly, like, realize when you come out of it, you have this renewed perspective. You're kind of like, I can't take advantage of that thing anymore because I did. And I've been telling myself that if I don't do this thing, then this thing's going to happen. And that thing happened. And there's so many things I'm saying right now. Who's to know which thing is which thing?
Oh, you sound like Dr.
Thing
Seuss
one,
a little bit.
Thing two, thing three, thing four.
So, where are we going with this today?
We're just talking about maxims of life, you know, like, you know, your experiences that help you just kind of grow a little bit, things that make you better humans, hopefully. But then some people kind of stop doing that. There's a lot of people, I think, that become complacent or to a point where they're no longer getting better anymore. They're kind of just like going with this flow that's not even theirs. It's just a flow, and it's kind of like they're checked. I don't want to say they're checked out, but they're just not really like – they're not doing anything for themselves, and therefore how can they do anything for anyone else?
Well, that's true. Now, I will tell you that one of the things that had an influence on me, and it's going to sound silly, but there was this show streaming one. I think it was Freevee, and it was called – Jury Duty. I don't know if anybody's familiar with it. And it was a reality type show. It was sort of like the Truman Show in that one person in the whole show didn't realize that it was a show. He thought that he was actually on a jury. And so, I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but my point in this is that this person who didn't know that he was being watched by all these people was the kindest and nicest person I've ever seen. And not only was he kind, but he didn't make fun of people that were really odd and did some really odd stuff. In fact, he embraced them, and he embraced their silliness or their weirdness or their eccentricities. Anyway, I learned from him after watching that to be careful with my words, to not criticize people as easily as I might have done in the past, to take a breath. And instead of saying something like, oh, that's a really weird person, or that's a strange thing that he's doing, instead just to be kinder. That's it. Just to be kinder, like my dad, you know?
Yeah. So speaking of kindness, I started rolling down my window and telling all the homeless guys holding up signs that we're going to get them better signs so that we can read them better. I'm making up a story. I'm sorry. I took your total sincere thought and I completely dismantled it into talking about something about... Well, look, the reason I did that was because in a way it's like it's just been a thought of mine for so long that I wish that somebody at some point told this group in a situation how to do it better. Because it's all like they get handed the same really like broken signs that don't make any sense. Nobody can read any of them. But we know what they're there for.
Well,
there's no
you can
question
tell
of what
they're
doing.
There for.
And then it's like, here's a platitude: too ugly to strip.
Wait. Oh, yeah.
Too broke to something too
ugly
to strip.
Yes, I've seen those. I've seen those.
That's a platitude.
On
signs. It's overdone. You can't put that there. It's not funny anymore. It never really was.
No, not really.
Unfortunately.
I mean, the sad part is that they're homeless and they have to be on a corner, you know, asking for help. That's sad.
Yeah, you know.
But look, I think it might be time to wrap this up. I'm not sure.
I don't know either, but I wasn't ready.
Wait a minute. Did I jump in there too soon?
I think you jumped to conclusions.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I guess like where I'm thinking about going is this whole idea of like life's a bunch of gobbledygook, right? It's a bunch of gobbledygook mixed in with platitudes. Here's something that happened to me on the way here. This is kind of bizarre. And I'm the kind of person that without hesitation sees somebody who might need help. And I've got two parts to this story.
Mm-hmm.
So they're unrelated in a sense, but they kind of are both related to helping people or the intent to want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one that happened was on the ramp coming on a 695 on the way here. I took the 695 west from 83 south, coming downward from South Baltimore and, you know, west side and Hamden. Took the 72 in the Four Falls Road staff. Then I hopped onto the freeway. And, okay, but seriously, though. I hopped on this ramp, and there's this guy. I think he was Middle Eastern. He just has his car, like, pulled to the side with his blinkers on. And he's just kind of, like, waves me down. He's trying to wave cars down. He's like, can you help me? And I said, sure. I opened my window. You know, I introduced myself. I say, hi. Is everything okay? And within 20 seconds, I get the most confusing interaction that I don't even know how to, like, I don't even know how to, like, I wouldn't have had an answer if you had given me an hour to even think about, like, what would you have done in this situation? So the guy opens up the window. He's telling me something about, like, maybe his car's broke down, but he needs someone to, like, help him. But he needs, like, he's not from here, and he maybe doesn't have a means to, like, use money here.
Oh, no.
So then he was like, do you have Cash App? And I was like, I don't have cash on me. I don't have Cash App. Like, what do you look like? What do you need? And he starts, like, taking off one of his necklaces. Like, I'll give you one of this for Cash App. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? I'm like, I don't want your jewelry, dude. Like, don't give me your jewelry. And then he's like, well, it's like, look, man, I don't have a lot of money. But if you need, like, money to help you, like, get gas if your car is dead or something, like, I can give you $10 in Cash App. He's like, thank you. Anyway. And he walked away.
Really?
And I was like, what just happened to me? And he starts trying to wave other people down. And to me, I saw a person who needs help.
Right.
A person that, you know, is Muslim, Middle Eastern man in a very trying time.
Yeah,
we need to
true.
Go into any of that.
True.
And I just wanted to help and be a good Samaritan. And then the most confusing interaction happened. And I was like, I don't know what just happened. And I'm going over to the podcast now. And I was just like, I don't even understand what the jewelry, what does he need? How much money does this guy need? Hundreds
of
dollars?
Oh, yeah, because you offered him some money.
It was just $10. And he just walked away as if it was just really confusing. So then it kind of reminded me, well, 2 days prior,
mm-hmm.
another situation happened to me in a car. I'm on my way home. I'm coming down the street that pretty much faces the intersecting street where my house is. And I see this, like, guy on a scooter that's kind of weaving left, weaving right, kind of like using it sort of like it's a skateboard, like a longboard, but doing it like a little sloppy-ish. We get to the sharp perpendicular part where the roads intersect, and he makes the left and he wipes out.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then I just immediately pull my car and I open the window and I come out to help him, and I realize it's my buddy who was helping me at my music festival.
You're kidding.
Who was, like, one of the really, like, most helpful people as far as, like, volunteers go. And he just, like, wiped out. And he, like, was bleeding from, like, like in between his eyes a little
bit.
That
was nice of you to stop. You got to be careful.
And then he was just like, dude, the brakes. The first thing he says, dude, the brakes are, like, went out or something like that. They're just not working. I'm like, are you okay?
Oh, man.
You've got blood coming down your face. It wasn't a lot. So I looked at him and was like, good news is it doesn't look like you need stitches necessarily. And your fingers are kind of scuffed up too. Are you okay, buddy? I'm happy. Like, I'm happy I know you to feel closer in that I want to help you in a bigger way. But I would have stopped for you. I stopped for you not knowing who you were. And I saw him wipe out. Might have been a little intoxicated, I was going to say. But at the same time, like...
But you just be careful, please. You know what
well,
I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's human nature to want to stop and help.
Well, you know, do it in a situation that's not like in the middle of an alley and the person's like, I've got a flat tire. And I'd be like, you are not going to get any help from me by it. Like,
yeah, right.
No,
right.
You have forget to, about that.
Well, you're the first one to say beware of your environment.
My last story happened when I was a cupcake person managing a cupcake truck. I was out somewhere in, like, you know, more middle town, Baltimore City, Mount Vernon area, and I'm parked outside this, like, yoga studio, and I'm selling cupcakes, like usual. I'm waiting for customers. Next thing I know, I hear this, like, screeching sound, and this guy gets run off the road by, like, a taxi cab, and basically, like, his car gets slammed into... I come out... I don't see this happen. I just hear it happen. I come out, and the guy in the car is this heavyset dude. The airbags went off in the car. He's kind of, sitting there still. Not still, but, like, just kind of, like, what just happened to me? He's bleeding a little bit. Not terribly so. I open up the window. Like, he's basically can't get out of his car, his door, because his car is wedged. It's a one-way street, wedged against another car. So I have to, I looked at this guy and I said, can you move your neck? Can you move your head? Can you look at me? Doesn't seem like he has a concussion. Doesn't seem like he's got a neck injury. That's really important to kind of ask somebody that. I said, I'm going to pull you out of the car one more time. Is your neck okay? Like, can you move your neck a little bit? He looked at me. He turned his neck a little bit. I was like, okay, I'm going to grab you underneath your arms. I'm going to pull you out this way. I'm going to put you on the curb. And then we're going to get this figured out. We're going to call the police. And, like, there was, like, other people coming onto the scene.
Uh-huh, good.
And yeah. Then the guy is starting to just, like, settle a little bit. And I pulled this 400-pound guy out of a car. Wearing my pink tie-dye shirt that says, keep calm, have a cupcake. Like, this is... This is no lie at all. Like, this actually happened. I go into the car. I don't have a whole lot of cupcakes left. I put a six-pack together of Red Velvets. I ask him, do you like Red Velvet cupcakes and cream cheese frosting? And he says, yes. And I watch the guy open up the cupcake thing, smile with blood in his mouth.
Oh, poor guy.
Because he bit his lip probably in the accident. Eating the cupcakes and just smiling.
No.
And I was like... Could this be any stranger? I feel like I ripped open my sweater with my keep calm, have a cupcake. And I literally did that. I actually, like, became the maximum of my shirt. So, I mean, like, there's just moments in my life where I just want to help people. And I just see opportunities to do it. Always within safety, of course. But I just, like, my immediate reaction is always to help people. And I just, I hope... other people out there can have that experience of suddenly thinking that somebody needs you. And it doesn't matter who that person is, but feeling like you're worth something, like you're a valuable person, because people will need you in your life. It doesn't matter who you are. Somebody's going to at some point. And that, to me, is worth living for.
Yeah.
Is knowing that other people need you and you have something unique to bring to the world or whatever that looks like for you. So that's kind of like where I try to find motivation. But ultimately, I'm just a really lazy piece of shit that doesn't get anything done.
Oh, ever. You come by that naturally.
All right, folks, that's Mom and me. Thanks for coming. Motivation? Do I need a trainer? How do I get myself to do anything? Now I'm just rambling.
Well,
about
nothing. I'm going to say this because I'm going to repeat this.
Okay, repeat it.
How did it get so late so soon? I think it's time to close this now.
That sounds good. Yeah, this is great.
Air, it's been a fun ride for these six podcasts that we've done. Let's put this together in a package. Everybody, nice talking to you tonight.
It's been real. This is...
Mom and...
Me.
Just think, Air... This all began with Playboy magazine and Sweet Tarts.
And the funny thing is, I only really read the articles.